For God so loved the world. It is the perfect Sunday to remind ourselves this candle that burns before us, coming on the heels of the first week of Advent, the hope of God. And the second week of Advent, the peace of God. These two candles led us into our first 2 weeks of worshiping together during the Advent season. And now this third week, the burning candle, the light of God's love. The power is immense. It's easy to take for granted. It is also sometimes difficult to see the broad nature of what God hopes for us, because life is complicated. Perhaps you heard of the priest who was confronted by a member of his larger parish who happened to be part of the mafia, who came to him and said, "Father, my brother just died. I want you to do the funeral. And in the eulogy, Father, I want you to say these words about my brother. He was a saint." You got that, Father? He was a saint. Well, the day the funeral comes, the father is standing before this large congregation in his parish, filled with all these people, many of whom are members of the mafia. And he stands before them and he says, "Brothers and sisters, we're gathered today to remember a man who was a cheater, a thief, an adulterer, or murderer, but compared to his brother, he was a saint." I like that too. So the power of God's love is immense, but it's complicated by the fact that you and I are called to be loving people. And yet, there are things in our lives and people in our way that frankly, we don't like being around. And the call to love those people is sometimes bigger than we believe we can handle. I was a student in seminary and happened to be in seminary in Ruchelkheim, Switzerland, right outside of Zurich. And during my experience during that year, it was 1984. Now, some of you remember back in those days. That was a long time ago. Some of you were not yet born. Some of you have been born for a long time. But for those of you that were not yet born, in 1984, there was tension in the world between East and West. It was called the Cold War. In the East, it was communism, headed by what was called the Soviet Union in those days. And in the West was the NATO forces and capitalism and folks who felt we were Christian and they were communist. We were good and they were bad. We were right and they were wrong. And so those of us who were in school in those days got caught up in that whole tension of, what do you do? What about our future? Clara so beautifully articulated, the future is with our teenagers and our young people. And I was not quite a teenager, I was a young adult at the time, but there was this sense of idealism. We got to do something to make a difference in the world. Well, I was in seminary in Switzerland, and I was approached one day by a Yugoslav friend named Mile. Now, for those of you that don't remember, Yugoslavia used to be a country. It's since broken up into six different, smaller countries. But in 1984, Yugoslavia was a communist country. Mile comes to me and he says, "There's a Baptist seminary in Novi Sad, Yugoslavia. There are students in that seminary, but they can't get Bibles. They can't get theological books so they can study what it means to be a pastor or a chaplain or minister. We need to help them," he said. "Will you go with me, drive a bus?" It turned out to be a 1980 orange VW bus. And we retrofitted this thing with a false bottom. When I say we, I mean Mile, retrofitted this thing with a false bottom so that underneath that false bottom, we did put hundreds of theological books and Bibles that we're going to take to Novi Sad, Yugoslavia, because it was illegal to take stuff in to a communist country from the West that had any kind of Christian theological framework. On top of that false bottom, we were going to put all kinds of archaeological tools so that if we got stopped at the border, we could say, we're just archaeology students on our way to Greece to participate in an archaeological dig. This sounded like a good idea at the time. I'm always up for adventure. So I said, why, sure, I'll help. So we gather together all these books, all these Bibles. Miele finishes the false bottom in the VW bus, and we start our journey. I'm driving. And in the meantime, I had recruited some other friends from our school to go with me. A Canadian, a guy from the Netherlands, a woman from Belgium, and a woman from New Zealand. So we're driving our bus, and we get to a few miles from the border. Now, I'd been driving all night long, and I was extremely tired. I was also starting to get cold, and I was also beginning to realize, this is crazy. What I'm doing is not only illegal, but I could get thrown in prison for this. And, you know, when you're tired and when you've been driving all night and you start thinking about stuff and your mind starts going off. And so I began to imagine spending the rest of my life in a communist prison, trying to write letters to my mother and father and sister, remembering my home in Signal Mountain, Tennessee, and all those fond memories. It had been a good life up to this point. And we drive up to the border of Yugoslavia, and my mind has been going through now for about an hour the course of what I believe my life is kind of probably going to be, living in Siberia, working in some kind of prisoner camp. So I'm sitting there at the border. The Yugoslav border guard comes over to our window. He's wearing a Yugoslav army uniform. I roll down the window, and he says, passports. And we give him our passports. And he walks back slowly to the guard shack at the border. What seemed like hours later, he comes back slowly walking. He comes to the door of our 1980 orange VW van. Roll down the window. He has nothing in his hands. His coat is closed, and he looks without a smile into our little bus. And he looks at each one of us. And I think at that point, oh well, it's been good. And I'm preparing to be herded off to a prison. And then he unzips his jacket, and he reaches in, and he pulls out our passports. And he hands New Zealand, Canada, Netherlands, Belgique, America. And he puts his hand on my shoulder and he says, have a nice day. And we did. We drove on into Yugoslavia. And what I discovered was, this communist country was filled with people just like you and me. Except other people told me that they were our enemies and that they were evil and that they were trying to figure out how to invade the West. What I discovered with our little group in the bus was they were concerned about feeding their families, figuring out how to worship, figuring out how to continue to get enough money to pay their bills, and how to just simply be together in their community. The last thing they were concerned about was invading our country. The picture you see in front of you is a few of the people that we came across. The guy on the far right's name is Janko. He was Serbian and was a strong Christian. The guy next to him with the beard, Ivan, was a communist sympathizer and self-declared atheist, and Mele with the big black head of hair. Yvonne, in conversation, Yvonne was Croatian, Janko was Serbian. In conversation with Janko over the coming months and years, we found out Yvonne became a Christian, went to seminary in Novi Sad, and became a pastor in Croatia. The books that we carried underneath that false bottom got delivered to Novi Sad and perhaps did some good in helping the students there nurture the churches there and feel a little more connected to God's love. It's awfully easy to take for granted the power of what we assume is something that is ours, that we're going to take to these poor people in other places, when in fact we discover the gospel is already there. God's been there a long time, working in among the good people, the children of God, created in Serbia, Croatia, Montenegro, Macedonia, Slovenia, China, where you and I have the opportunity to not so much convert these people as simply share God's love given to us in abundance, and to them in abundance. It's an amazing thing, God's love. Some of you have read the book by Michael Scott Moore, The Desert and the Sea. Michael Scott Moore is a journalist and thought it would be interesting. Back a few years ago, when Somali pirates were the rage and kidnappings were happening and hostages were being taken, Michael Scott Moore thought it would be really, really interesting to see if he could interview some pirates in Somalia. So he got permission, he got what he thought was safe passage. He entered into Somalia and for a couple of weeks was conducting interviews, interacting with all these different Somalis, only to suddenly find out that he himself ended up being kidnapped. For the next 2.5 years, he was a hostage. And as a hostage, in the midst of this horrible condition that he found himself in with other hostages, he felt at various points deep hatred for the people holding him captive. He said he vacillated back and forth between wanting to kill the people that were holding him hostage and wanting to commit suicide. The depth of his intense difficulty, hatred of others and self-hatred, was for him an ongoing phenomenon until, he said, about 2 years into his captivity. It just so happened that he overheard the Somali pirates had a radio that happened to be on, and it happened to be tuned, ironically, to the BBC. And it happened that that broadcast from the BBC was broadcasting the homily of Pope Francis. It was in Italian and then translated into English. It was staticky, he could barely hear it. But the English that he heard coming through that BBC broadcast said something about the power of God's love that changes everything. It can transform hatred into forgiveness. It can transform dislike and disdain into the power of God's love. Michael Scott Moore said he could barely hear it, but what he made out, he said it created this strange thing that all of a sudden, over the next few moments, he began to feel compassion for his captors. The hatred that he had suddenly got melted into what he said the only thing he could describe was the love that Pope Francis was attempting to describe in his homily. Michael Scott Moore couldn't explain it. He had trouble putting it in words, even acknowledged that writing it as a journalist, and by the way, he described himself as a non-religious person, coming from a, what he said, a lapsed Catholic background where he hadn't attended Mass in years, didn't really know anything that much about the Bible. But now suddenly found himself overwhelmed with a sense of gratitude and the power of love. He couldn't explain it. He didn't understand it. All he knew was that he started feeling differently toward these Somali pirates. And out of that different feeling, he started treating them differently. They noticed it, and he noticed it. And the more they noticed it, he said he could sense a change in their demeanor and the way he treated him. And he said it was this positive feedback loop that was quite amazing. When he finally was released about 3 months later, as he began to write this down and reflect on what happened to him, he said, "It didn't make my life perfect, but it allowed me to see that part of the world and those people who had done me such wrong completely in a different light." We heard our scripture from John 3:16. There's a follow-up in 1 John, the little epistle at the end of the New Testament. And this, for me, helps in encapsulating what Michael Scott Moore was trying so hard to explain, this idea that there's no fear in love, but there is this power. Perfect love that comes from God casts out all fear. And then a couple of verses later, 1 John, it says this, that it was that Michael Scott Moore experienced. The commandment we have from Jesus is this: those who love God must love their brothers and sisters. Now here's the thing that's difficult. If Michael Scott Moore or any of us in his situation had been told, "Now, it's just the right thing to do. It's what God says. You need to love your captors," it would have been impossible. It would have been a commandment that was a bridge too far. But what the Bible seems to be saying is this is not so much a commandment as it is a consequence of what God is doing, wants to do in every one of our hearts and our spirits. The greatest gift of all that we get in Jesus and celebrate this time of year is the poignant reminder we can be commanded to do these things all day long, but we have the power of God's love living in us and channeled through us. And the consequence of that love is truly incredible. Let us today, together, reclaim the power of God's love. May it be so, brothers and sisters. Amen.